Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools, the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Welcome to another discussion on science in the Bible, brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. This is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research. Let's have some fun today with the topic of dinosaurs. This is a huge topic, and the media loves to use this topic to mislead and deceive our youngsters. We will briefly discuss several aspects of such an enormous topic. Well, why are dinosaurs so interesting, so fascinating to children? Well, for one, is their shapes are unlike anything else that they've seen. And for two, is the ones that seem to be the most popular are the ones that are the largest. You know, looking at a little man beside a gigantic dinosaur, of course you'd be interested in that sort of thing. But we do need to keep in mind that not all dinosaurs are ginormous. There are some that are the size of a small dog, or even some that are as small as a chicken. Okay, so they're not all gigantic. From an evolution perspective, paleontologists have virtually no clues to the origin of the bird-hipped dinosaurs. They appear in the fossil record already structurally distinct from the lizard-hipped dinosaurs, without any telltale traits which might link them to a particular group of earlier dinosaur of creatures. All right? So here, both types of dinosaurs, bird-hipped and lizard-hipped, arrive instantly, no clue where they came from. That's from a book called Vertebrate History. Whereas, from the biblical perspective, did they really live millions of years ago? No, of course they lived with man. Some were recorded one day before man, if you look at Genesis 1, and some on the same day. For example, on which day were the dinosaurs created? Well, the flying dinosaurs, which aren't truly dinosaurs, but pterosaurs, pterodactyls, that sort of thing, were on day 5. Day 5 says, and God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creatures that what? Hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. How about the sea creatures? Well, they were also on day 5, and God created great whales, that word is tanin, and every living creature that moveth which the waters brought forth abundantly after the kind, and every So the animals that lived in the waters and the animals that lived in the sky were both created on day 5. How about day 6? And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, the cattle after his kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind, and God saw that it was good. So that's where we would get the big giant ones that a lot of the children like to play with. Now, let's also think, after each day, God said, and it was good, right? And it was good. And on the last day, and it was very good. Well, not too long ago, there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex that was named Sue. This T-Rex was found nearly complete, appeared to be about 300 years old, however you figure that out. It lived in horrible pain. It had wounds in her jaw, which were abscessed, had several broken ribs, which had partially reset. It walked on one leg that was broken at one time and could bear little weight. Now, would God call this very good if this was millions of years, prior to man? Did this all happen before Adam? Or was this the result of sin, as the Bible says it is? Well, some people would say, Jay, nowhere in the scriptures is the word dinosaur. It's just not there. That is true. The King James Bible was published in 1611. The word dinosaur was not coined until 200 years later, 1841. So, of course, you won't find the word dinosaur in the Bible. How could you use a word that didn't exist at the time? However, the Hebrew word tanin is used 27 times in the Bible. And dragons, the word dragon, sometimes the word tanin is interpreted as dragon, but the word dragon is used 35 times in the Bible. So that would include also the New Testament, the Greek, right? So tanin is used 27 times in the Bible, in the Hebrew, and the word dragon is used 35 times. In Psalm 74, verse 13, we have sea dragons. Look at Psalm 74, verse 13, and you'll find dragons that live in the sea. Could this be a plesiosaur? In Isaiah 30, verse 6, we have flying dragons, or flying serpents. Could this be a pterodactyl? In Isaiah 34, verse 13, we have land dragons. Could these be dinosaurs? Okay, those are just a few. But the really great descriptions are in the book of Job. How about Behemoth? Then, as we read from the book of Job, chapter 40, verses 15 through 18, it says, "Behold now Behemoth, which I made with you. He eats grass like an ox. His strength is in his loins, and his force in the muscles of his belly. He moves his tail like a cedar. His bones are like bars of iron." Now, modern-day footnotes in Bibles would say, well, this is probably a hippopotamus or a rhinoceros. Do either of these animals have a tail like a cedar tree? So, no, it doesn't describe anything that we know of today. How about Leviathan? Book of Job, chapter 41. "Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? Will he make a covenant with thee, or wilt thou bind him for thy maiden? Lay thine hand on him, remember the battle, do no more. None is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? His teeth are terrible round about. His scales are his pride, so close to another that no air can come between. None is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? His teeth are terrible round about. His scales are his pride." And so close together, no air can come between. "Out of his mouth go burning lamps. Sparks of fire leap out. Out of his nostrils goes smoke as out of a seething pot of cauldron. His breath kindleth coals. A flame goes out of his mouth." That is the part that today's scientists would say, "Ha ha ha, you Bible people believing in all these myths." However, if we think about the bombardier beetle, that's exactly what he does. Like he has chambers, two chambers, that can make, that produce chemicals that when they squirt them together, they explode. And there are different types of dragons that also have two chambers that come and lead down into their nostrils. Were these Leviathan? Well, we don't know. But one thing we do know is there is nothing like Leviathan that exists today. So, Jay, are you trying to tell me that dinosaurs were on the ark? Well, what does the Bible say? And Noah went in, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him, into the ark because of the waters of the flood, of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, and of fowls and of everything that creepeth upon the earth. There went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded Noah. Jay, that's impossible. How can you get a giant dinosaur into the ark? Well, I think Noah had a little bit more sense than that. I don't think he would have taken gigantic dinosaurs into the ark. I think he would have taken little babies, wouldn't you? I sure would. I wouldn't want to have to wrestle with those big things. Okay, so did they survive the flood? And that's what I wanted to kind of spend the most time on today. We have dragon-led legends all around the world. If you think about, if you go to a Chinese restaurant and they put that red and white placemat in front of you, the typical one that a lot of Chinese restaurants use is you look at this placemat, you'll see a snake, you'll see a horse, you'll see a sheep, a monkey, a dog, a boar, a rat, an ox, a tiger, a rabbit, and what? A dragon. And this dates back to the 600 to 900 AD. It was popular during the Tang Dynasty. That's 600 to 900 AD. That's long after the flood. Well, how would we identify dragons or dinosaurs if they did live with man? Well, stop and think about it. If I said the word Triceratops, would you be able to come up with an image in your mind as to what a Triceratops looks like? Well, most of us would. It's a large creature that has three horns on his head, right? How about a Stegosaurus? Well, a lot of us would recognize a Stegosaurus because he's the one, the giant beast that has all these plates up on his back. How about the Tyrannosaurus Rex? If I give you that name, you think of a creature, a ginormous creature, walking on two very powerful hind legs and having two little itty-bitty front arms or front legs, right? Okay, so we recognize these by their shapes, distinctive features. So how would we recognize if these lived during the time of man? By seeing artwork that resembles these creatures that we know by their shapes. For example, there is artwork in our Morrison Foundation that the Indians drew on the mountainsides. Some look like giant sauropods, giant dinosaurs drawn on the cliffs out in the Morrison Foundation. In Cambodia, there is a building, a temple, with images all around it, and one of those images looks almost virtually identical to a stegosaur. This is a 12th century temple. Looking at it very closely, it looks very much like a stegosaur. How do they explain that? They say, well, that's not really a stegosaur. That's a big creature with a palm tree behind it. There are stories about St. George, as being a myth, right? But when you look at so many different displays of so-called Saint George around Europe, you find what looks like real people with real faces fighting real dinosaurs. And what do I mean by real? These aren't cartoons. They all have very, very distinct features. Now, yes, some of these features around Europe, some of these displays around Europe are clearly myths. That's true. You know, for example, there's images and sculptures of Triton, who is the son of Poseidon. Okay, that's Greek mythology. But that doesn't mean that all of these sculptures are myths, right? How about the ones that are recognizable? How do we recognize a Triceratops? By his three horns. How about a Stegosaurus? By his plates. Well, there's actually an ancient egg-shaped ornament that actually has a artwork of a Triceratops and a man riding on him. Well, there happens to be a book which I highly recommend. It's called The Untold Secrets of Planet Earth. It's by Vance Nelson, and you can get it through the Institute for Creation Research. Go to icr.org, go to store, and you can pick up this fascinating book. And it describes it. How do we identify dinosaurs? Well, we identify them by their body size, body proportions, positions of legs, skull shape, teeth, etc. Okay, he goes into that quite clearly. And then, throughout this entire book, he shows different locations around Europe and even in Canada with creatures that are clearly recognizable. These creatures were sculpted or drawn or painted by man. In the Carlisle Cathedral in Carlisle, England, there are sauropods. That castle, that cathedral, was built in the 12th century. The 12th century. In Castle de Haar in the Netherlands, in the 15th century, there is artwork of a coelophysis. That is a particular type of dinosaur, a coelophysis, in this 15th century castle. In a chateau in France, and I'm not going to try to pronounce the names of the chateaus in France. My French is not very good. As you can tell, my English isn't all that great. But anyway, there are multiple carvings of a Massapondylus. That's a different type of dinosaur, and it's found in this 16th century French chateau. In a different French chateau, in a different 16th century chateau, there is actually a Platosaurus all over the buildings. In 17th century Germany, in Rottenburg, there is a Proterosuchus. Okay, it's in a fountain in the middle of a town. That fountain was specifically built in 1608. There is a Roman history book that was found. It's a 16th century book that was found in Germany. It actually has artwork in it of a Titanophonius and a description of this Titanophonius attacking a Roman army. This is a history book written in 1505. A Titanophonius based on the artwork that is in this book. In Spain, there's a 17th century Nathosaurus, which is on an altar cloth that was actually made in the year 1600 AD. And once again, how do they know that? It's by distinct features of each of these creatures. In Italy, there's a 14th century ornitholist, on a, it's a, as I recall, I believe this one is in Venice, but in any event, one fascinating thing about it is that when we gather up the bones from the fossilized bones, we put them together and we make images that we think that these look like. But then when you actually look at some of the artwork of the exact same features, you find, oh, well, this one didn't have skinny legs. He had very thick muscles here. Okay. So this is just an interesting difference here. So let's pull all this together. Paleontology dates back to when? The 19th century. That being the case, all of these different dinosaurs that I have just described to you were sculpted, painted, or some sort of artwork between the 12th and 17th century. That is 700 to 200 years prior to any paleontology, prior to anyone putting these bones together, trying to figure out what these creatures looked like. So this artwork clearly shows creatures that nobody knew anything about until hundreds of years later. Amazing. There are actually 20 of these creatures in this book. I just listed a few of them. So, did man and dinosaur walk on the earth together? Absolutely. Back to St. George, they claim he was a myth. Well, people claim that Jesus' resurrection was a myth as well. So maybe we need to honestly look into that one as well. People label this a myth because they believe that God's word is a myth. People believe that St. George is a myth because they believe that dinosaurs are a myth, when there's an enormous amount of evidence that the dinosaurs did exist during that time. So maybe when someone claims that these sculptures are myths, turn that question around. Oh, really? Can you tell me the story of that particular myth? Well, of course they can't, because they've just been told that it's a myth. The obvious question then becomes, what happened to all of these dinosaurs? Well, there could have been several things. One, according to the fossil record, the vegetation after the flood would not support them, so we wouldn't expect many to have survived. If you think about what happened during the flood, 99.99% of the biosphere, everything that was alive, got buried. The only thing that wasn't was the animals on the ark and Noah's family on the ark. So what would these creatures that would get to be, grow to be so large, what would they eat? So the truth about the fossil record, they talk about all these animals becoming extinct. The bigger question may be, how did so many of them survive when there was only so few of them on the ark? That would be the one reason why they died out. Then the other reason that they died out would be, these creatures that would grow so large after hundreds of years, and in this case from Noah's flood up to the 12th and 17th centuries, that's thousands of years, These guys could have gotten very, very large. The ones that did survive could have gotten very large, and they would have been tremendous menaces because they would have been eating everything in sight. So man, you know, what the environment didn't kill, man probably killed because they were such such a menace. So back to St. George, why do we see so much artwork and sculptures of a man killing a dinosaur? Because they were menaces, and that's probably what wiped them all out. All right, well, that's a very quick discussion on dinosaurs. Let's end in prayer. Father, the topic of dinosaurs is constantly displayed in schools, toy stores, etc., to confuse our children. Evolutionary dogma is a major stumbling block for unbelievers, and it seriously cripples many believers. Father, the problem with dinosaurs is that so many children are just captivated by it. So I pray that these children's parents would understand more about the dinosaurs and could teach the children that how they really do fit into the scriptures. I pray that all who listen to these broadcasts would be blessed by seeing how the Bible and science truly do work well together, and that your word can be trusted from cover to cover. Amen. And once again, this Bible series is brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. This is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research. If you would like to know more about WCFS, feel free to look at wcfs.edu. If you would like to listen to previous broadcasts, go to wthuradio.com. That's WTHU, that's the call letters for this Thurmont radio station, wthuradio.com. Then scroll down and click Family by Design. That is the broadcast by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. And if you'd like to know more about ISBR, the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research, feel free to look at isbrministries.org.
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey, helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
'Cause the greatest gift the Father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children.
Your children.
He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.